So I promised Noam to get this talk a little bit less theoretical, but Noam assures me that he's going to turn it. His brain is going to burst anyway, as is all of the rest of us. So the talk really is practical. It's about dependent arising and the windows. What are the windows? What's our escape route out of there? The doorways that open to invite us out. And I think we saw in this, it's a really good introduction, what happened the session before, because there was a sense of stuckness in every single story. The sense of stuckness, the sense of something going round and round, the sense that this pattern keeps going and I'm not quite sure how I can stop it. There's a sense of stuckness in there, and that's the nature of samsara. The sense that, and the pain in that, that all there is, you know, birth, doing, job, work, banks, don't know what, car, family, sickness, and that's it, and I'm under the earth. There's kind of this sense of something really going round that is round and round in a constructed world, which is contracted, means that it kabets. I feel contracted inside the thing that keeps turning round and round. And that's the nature of the painful side of samsara. And one place that we can really see the way out is the dukkha, the pain. As soon as we see it as painful, at that place we already have an opportunity for opening a new way. Dukkha is to be seen. The First Noble Truth is very simple. See dukkha, because dukkha is your friend. He's not a problem. Dukkha, pain, the difficulty in all of that in samsara is your friend, is your, in a way, your way of knowing that here is contraction, or here is sankharas, constructions, here I am controlled by patterns, it's painful, and that's our window. So dukkha is a very helpful, and it goes right to the very, very, very deepest place of, should we say, subtle meditation. And if you read great masters like Achan Cha or others, they'll say, you know, there's total peace, and the minute the mind moves in any direction to create thought, word, view, any movement in the mind, it's dukkha. No movement in the mind, total peace. Any the slightest movement, even motivation to think something, it's already dukkha. So any construction has in it building of a world of samsara. Any construction is building a world of samsara and has in it pain. But there is the good news about paticca samuppada. There's something that I didn't mention yesterday, which is really important, which is if we are making the world, and the world is being made because we're just, the world and us making each other, a dynamic process, then there's nothing fixed and forever and kind of total about this. Nobody can tell you that, no priest, no professor can tell you that this, you're in hell and you'll not get out of it. You're in this and you'll not get out. You're in a psychological problem, call it a name of a medical name, a pathology. You're in a pathology, finished. The whole thing is dynamic, meaning we are making ourselves as we go along. That's a beautiful insight. If we can just take that insight, we make ourselves as we go along. Every moment we are remaking ourselves. There is a huge amount of freedom in there. and dynamic, and that karma is not a system up there which controls us like this. You know, we have to just, you know, what God is up there writing in the book, like in Yom Kippur, some people say or feel it's all written in the book. Our goral is fixed, and it's all there. Nothing we can do. It's not like that at all. The whole thing is utterly dynamic and playful. The dakini, the female energy of play, is in this creation of the next moment. So I want to talk about practice mostly, how we work with this. And I would think, let me basically, in a very, very simplistic way, I would say in the whole Buddhist world, there are three kinds of practice. I'm going to make it really child simple. So I'm telling you it's so too simple, but maybe it will help to clarify. The first, or in the three kinds of practice, one is deep quiet and samadhi. And it is a direction. There are monasteries that teach it. There are teachers that believe it. This is the way. There, it's in all the suttas. It's in the jhana. It's in concentration practice, and so on and so on and so on. It's deep quiet and concentration where everything stops. At that place, there is no samsara. There is no patterns that we're just talking about that we've heard just now. Arguments in the family. There is no thought that upsets and goes round and round. There is no birth, aging, death. There is no past. There is no future. Karma stops. In that place, and that's a kind of classical place of practice called the place of stopping the wheel. And it's samadhi, it's jhanas, it's concentration practice, and we do it. We do it light, but we do it. We sit in quietly, minding our own business, watching our breath, and at that moment, like, everything stops. And it really does stop. It's not artificial. It's not we're not fooling ourselves. It stops. The things are stopped. We're not creating more chains of suffering for ourselves. We're not creating more chains for others. It stops the thing. And this is a valuable practice. And it's important all our life to go in this direction as one of the three major directions of practice. And you can see in any of the stories we just heard, you take any of them. If we would have stopped, any of you would have stopped in the middle, or if you can think back on those stories, just stop and feel everything stops, and you realize then ways out of this pattern. The stopping is part of the problem, that we are caught in the chain and we don't stop. I mean, you're looking at me, so I'm looking at you, so I remember your story. And you know, if you would have just stopped and say, I'm stopping right now in the cooking, in the pairing, in listening to Omri. I will not respond to Omri. I will not do any more cooking. I will just take one moment of kazer esashniot and just stop where I am. And the whole thing can break down, and the whole pattern, suddenly you can look at it again. So stopping is important in life, important in practice, and it stops the chains. Another place that we break the wheel of samsara is more the classical work that we're doing in Vipassana. It's a sense of deep, what I mentioned yesterday is deconstruction. It's the gradual path of purification, tihur. We purify our actions through morality and right action. We purify our minds, so that the chains of thinking or acting that hold us in prison, in the samsara prison, the chains just become less and less controlling. because Vipassana purifying practices that purify, that clean the stuff, that stop the chain, because we just get off. We're not interested anymore in this chain of reactions and automat, and there's no automat there. So that's there is the other practice in which illusion is reduced and reduced and reduced. Ignorance is reduced and reduced and reduced. Instead of avidya, there's vidya. So they stop building sankharas, and I'm going to talk about this much more now. But that's the second way. It's really through wisdom. A purification, wisdom. We just see that there's less and less hold that this chain, painful chain of samsara, birth, aging and death, is less and less controlling us and less interesting. Second way. Third way is the more the non-dual way. It's a sense that that things are already perfect, that nirvana is right here. And it's also built into all the Buddhist teaching in different ways, especially some particular, it's more Zen Buddhism is there, Dzogchen in the Tibetan tradition, the Advaita in the Hindu, Vedanta, means the samsara actually doesn't exist. The things are perfect as they are. The natural great perfection. It's right now, there isn't, I don't need to create samsara because I don't need to believe in it. And it's a kind of instant awakening of this whole thing collapses because it doesn't exist in the first place. It's all a big, what did Shakespeare say? All noise and this life is a beautiful...
Sound and fury, right?
Again, say it again.
Full of sound and fury signifying nothing.
Exactly. This whole life is full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. In other words, it's all a big balloon. And we can see, to have the mind of nirvana. It's a little bit like fake it in order to make it. but it's a practice. So that we have the mind of nirvana, the mind of perfection, the mind that just cuts through with no gradual path. So these are basically the three great, if you like, ways in the Buddhist world. The way of silence and samadhi, the way of purification and wisdom, and the way of the non-dual, cutting through. So I want to talk about, start with sankharas like I did yesterday, and look at them from the point of view of practice. And I must say that one of the interesting things about sankharas, constructions, is that we believe in them. We believe that we are who we are, but it doesn't take very much to realize that this is a belief. And like a mouse will make mouse sankharas and believe he's a mouse and believe in the world according to the mouse. And I remember that maybe my first sort of initiation into all of this was when I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I read constantly from the Jungle Book, the Mowgli stories, okay, of Rudyard Kipling, and had a very old book that was maybe 100 years old that I found. And I used to read this book every day when I was young, all the time. And what fascinated me was, if Mowgli grew up in wool, with a wolf father and a mother, so he thought he was a wolf, and that's his world, was a wolf world. So Stephen, growing up in Stephen's mother, father, London, thinks he is Stephen in a Stephen world. But there's nothing there. Because if I'd happened to have father that was a wolf, I'd think I was a wolf. And it happened to a father of mother that think they were German Jewish refugees from Germany, then I think that. So absolutely there's nothing there that's, you know, and that was my thing that was really obsessing me when I was young, that the whole thing is stam, is like I said yesterday, shruti is arbitrary. You just build the sankharas according to what you find yourself in. You're born into this, so they build the sankharas, so you don't need to believe in them. And it's not real. So let's look at how we work with a sankhara in the practice. And say, take for example a sankhara that gives us a lot of trouble, like anxiety about the future, for example, or just anxiety about anything. So the wheel of paticca-samuppada, the samsaric wheel, if there's total ignorance, then we believe totally in this sankhara of anxiety and we are anxious. We believe the story. We are anxious about the future. We just think what will be. There's no room there at all. We are totally in it, the anxiety. It is difficult for us, we're painful, we don't even know we're anxious. We just believe it. The world is like this and I don't know what to do. The mind is full and there's no space there at all. And the sankhara then is really strong and the pain is really strong. And there's no space there. And of course it steals all our joy, because we're totally invested in it, we're inside it. And that's perhaps the ordinary mind that is taken over by a sankhara called anxiety. No room there. I am anxious, what will happen, or what I think, I'll ask everybody, my year, for example, I mean, in this case, and just be totally inside it. The illusion is then total. Our practice is to come into a mindset like that. Firstly, just if we can see dukkha, we already broke the illusion. It's no longer 100%. When we're in it, we don't see dukkha. We just are in suffering. We don't see it. We don't see dukkha. To see dukkha, we already need a step back. We need a little bit of space to say, oh, this is a real painful set of thinking that I'm going through, this anxiety that I'm having, so maybe I need to go to a psychologist, or maybe I need to I'm full of anxiety, I see the anxiety, it's giving me a lot of pain and trouble. That's already needs a little bit of space, and it's already looking at it as a from the outside a little bit, giving it a little bit of dynamic. It has dynamic, it's not closed 100%, this sankhara, but it's not yet, I would say, the practice. Practice would continue. One of the places that we can do is replace it with positive sankharas, and that's quite legitimate. It's not fooling ourselves. The Buddha talked about it a lot. We can take a negative sankhara that steals our joy and makes us feel suffering and replace it with positive sankharas for the time being. Bentime. It's a helpful strategy to do this. Use antidotes. Medicine. One of the medicines for anxiety would be metta, would be love, would be simple joys of life, would be sitting by the sea and feeling really with nature. Antidotes, just replacing the negative sankharas with positive sankharas, because it's wise move, it's a wise way to practice. They're still sankharas, but it's really helpful to do that. Acceptance, another one, wise sankhara, is acceptance. Totally accept the situation. This is the way it is. Further practice would be begin to meditate with it and find calm and space and ninochut, ease, and the anxiety becomes less because we repeatedly find ourselves a calm samadhi, breathing, the body, the breath and the body, or walking in nature, mindfulness. Mindfulness pushes away and reduces the power of the sankharas. So calmness, quietness, you know, just breathing already is practice of the first kind I talked about before, and it quietens down the mind and it reduces the control of the sankhara. The Dharma work begins to see, wait a minute, what is this sankhara? The second category of practice, the wisdom practice, would see, what is this sankhara? Oh, it's just a thought. Thought that goes round, that gives me so much dukkha. Okay, I'm going to look at it. It's a thought repeating itself. It's a thought that brings another thought of the same kind. Paticca samuppada, co-creation. It creates itself. One thought brings another. One thought brings another of the same kind. Well, you know, the seeds of this thought bear fruit in the next thought. It's creating itself. Okay, I see the thoughts. And that's the beginning of the wisdom. This is not anxiety anymore. It's thought about the future. So you're already in another territory. And we've already taken responsibility for our mind at that place, we've taken responsibility for that sankhara. We now see it much more clearly, and we see it's just a series of thoughts. But this carries on. When we keep looking at it, this series of thoughts gets lighter and lighter and lighter. Every time we look at a sankhara deeply, it dissolves. Just the nature of the things, they are like that. Fundamentally, everything is empty, or not a thing. So, if we look carefully at the thought, it gets lighter and lighter, less and less interesting, less and less dominant, less and less painful, less and less something. The message becomes less strong. The words my year just fly in the air. They don't have any weight anymore. They're not interesting. So the construction, when we look at any sankhara, the construction by itself becomes deconstructed. These thoughts will get lighter and lighter the more we look at them. Oh yeah, okay, here it is again. Oh, hello, bye bye, hello, bye bye. And as we do this, by itself, there is more space opening up in our consciousness. Because all the space this chain of thinking has taken up is freed, is liberated. So we find ourselves more spacious. What was controlling us before, this sankhara of anxiety, is dissolved, the thoughts get lighter and lighter, it no longer takes control. So we find ourselves with more energy and space and freedom. Without saying, I want freedom, I want freedom. Just we took off the lid on the saucepan that was pressing on us, and we've got more space. And there's less me. Again, not to say, oh, I want to be less me and less selfing, and the Buddha said we might, anatta, 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 no self, no self, no self. No, it happens by itself. The selfing, so much self-creation involved in this chain of thought on anxiety, the minute that becomes lighter and lighter and lighter, the self gets less, a little bit less, a little bit less me, the center of things. Just happens by itself. And more joy comes with there. And if we go more deeply into it, we learn with the wisdom eye the unreality of this construction, that we were in illusion. Anxiety that we felt was so solid is just a dream. It's gone, it's illusion, it doesn't have reality. And we learn from there that the whole thing doesn't have reality, the whole construction of samsara doesn't really it's just not solid. And we learn it through these kind of things, this thing that we held as so strong, and we see the way it's dissolved and opens up to space. And as we do that, they're just simply less thinking. So thought as sankhara, the minute we work with it, we see how it's just flying by and becomes light and free, the thought. Actually, there's less thinking. It's just not that interesting. The thoughts are not needed so much. So there's just less of them. And then we have see how they become little waves instead of big waves. And the non-dual aspect of that is that when we look at little waves, we see the ocean. We see that it's consciousness, this thought. We thought it was anxiety holding a big message, very heavy on us, pressing us down. Actually, we look at it, we see it's just thought, it's just a light message, has no weight, passes by, small wave, not that interesting, but it's consciousness. And we see that from there, the thought is just a display, like the Tibetans say. It's just they call it froth, ketsev, yeah. On the waves, they're just ketsev. Just bubbles, and they shine with awareness thoughts, and in the non-dual sense, every thought is liberation itself. Every thought is liberating us by just seeing that it was a construction, and it's no longer really a construction. We cut through it, we see through it. So, what you call it, self-liberation. That the things of samsara, the constructions, the sankharas, if you look at them properly, they liberate themselves, they liberate us. So what was a construction is actually liberating us. Because we can't say it's bad. There's nothing bad in the world. You know, it's just a form. So the form is creating out of the space, and if we are connected with that, it liberates us as we see that. So there's a sort of process there of liberation inside the forms. Well, then we deal with consciousness because it's what we're dealing with all the time. The consciousness is another of the stages, the kielu stages in the paticca samuppada, although they're not really stages because the whole thing is not linear at all. Even though it looks like a 12, it's not linear, it's really a dynamic. But we do need to deal with consciousness, we need to think about it, we need to be aware of all the huge wisdom in the Dharma world around consciousness. And to know how can we practice with consciousness. Okay, it's not a sankhara, but it's awareness. Can I practice with them? Well, of course we can. In the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, "See mind in mind." You know, see if your mind is like this—a dull mind, a sharp mind, a tired mind. It doesn't say thoughts, it's mind. How is our mind? How is your mind right now? The consciousness is a phenomena. It is arising through conditions. consciousness, by the way, and I don't want to get into philosophy, otherwise no one will run out. But consciousness in the, I would say, the Buddha's time and the Buddha's teaching is not something floating about in the universe by itself and getting reborn in life after life. It's also resulting from conditions. If there is a sankhara, there is a body, we are born in a body, then we have consciousness. If we're not born in a body, there's no sankharas, samsara chain, there's no consciousness. I know this might lead people to go, whoa, wait a minute, and there's so much that we can say about that, but I kind of don't want to get into that too much because we can get really stuck with that. And it's true that there are all kinds of levels of subtlety. You can get more subtle and more subtle with consciousness, and it feels like it's nothing to do with objects or with seeing something. It's just awareness and so on. But consciousness fundamentally is a result of conditions like everything else. The Buddha said one time, someone asked the Buddha, consciousness must be like a light. So if the light shines through a window onto a wall opposite, then we say, ah, there's consciousness, because it lights up an object. Like, I'm conscious of this, the mats here on this floor. So there is consciousness and a thing that is seen, and I know I'm conscious of something. But supposing that you took away the wall, so that consciousness didn't fall on anything. So the Buddha said, well, there'll be something behind the wall. Maybe it would be a pool of water or something. Supposing you took away the pool of water, so there was nothing there, would consciousness exist by itself without any object? And the Buddha said, no. So consciousness depends on an event called being conscious of something. Even if it feels very subtle and unsupported and universal awareness and so on, there is in the, I would say, early Dharma, consciousness is not a thing at all that sits by itself. But it's important that we are aware that this is a place that we can also practice, and it's not so difficult. We think, how can I practice on consciousness? But it isn't so difficult. We in the Satipatthana Sutta, like I said, we can look at the different ways in which consciousness is coloured, or we can just get a sense of knowing. We're just knowing. What is this knowing? What is the knower? The knower and the known are making each other, we are making each other, according to Paticca-samuppada. The knower and the known and the knowing come together in a moment, so we can look at that. So what's the, who's the knower? What's the knowing? And sometime when you're sitting, you can just pay little attention to that. Anyway, nevertheless, I would say it's not so easy to work with consciousness. It's not so difficult either. Also, the next stages are not so easy, which is the stage of contact with the world. It happens very, very fast. The minute we open our eyes, we see something, boom, it happens immediately. So it's not an easy place to perception, shall we say, tfisa, the fosit olam, it's not an easy place to practice. And generally we don't practice there, because it all happens too fast. I don't know if I've told you the story, but it's just such a kind of dramatic story for me that it's a very good example. I was in Switzerland. Maybe I said this before. Did you hear the story from me before? No, of walking. I told you on Shabbat, did I?
Yeah.
Okay. So I was in Switzerland and I was walking in the hills, and it was afternoon and I had to come home. And I was going down from it was in the Alps, and I was going down. So I really couldn't go back. It was the afternoon, and there, the village was down there, a few miles, kilometers away was the village to come back. So I was walking there with my sister, actually, and it was like big broad area. I was happy walking, and all of a sudden one side dropped away and there was a tsuk, maybe 1 kilometer down, tiny little houses. Now I've got a problem with pachad gvaim, which I thought I didn't have. And suddenly Sankara, old Sankara, up it came. I saw that, oh my God. So I walked here, and I didn't walk near the edge of that tsuk, which was really, really like 1 kilometer down, tiny houses and tiny trees. So then I walked like that and it was okay. But then the other side also became a tsuk. And there was a path like this. On top of the mountain was like that. There was a path like that. And I collapsed. I became dechila, dizzy, nausea. I lost my focus. I couldn't stand up. Dechila and the tummy. I just collapsed on the ground. Couldn't take one step. And I was really shocked. Where that came from? You know, I was... And I got up. I started to say, wait a minute. Here I am, you know, Keilu, practicing 30 years in the Dharma, and here I am lying on my face on the ground full of fear. And what's going on? So I said, I better do something about this. So I got up and I breathed and I sat down, took a few breaths, and didn't look left, didn't look right, and just sat there for a few minutes. And then I realized I had no choice. I had to go back. I had to go forward. I couldn't go back. So I decided that I would work on making no processing whatsoever of anything that came through my eyes. I would not have any interest in anything at all that arise in the visual field. In other words, I would look at down and see houses down there, like so small, but see them just as spots of red, the roofs, little red color, green color, red color, spots, nothing at all, no interest, not relevant to me, just spots of light with no meaning. And I could do that, and I could walk. If I did that, there was no message there that was of any interest. So I could keep going until I lost concentration. Suddenly it all came up. Here I am on the there. Nausea, dizziness, oh my God. And then three breaths, and I could keep going another 10, 15 minutes. And this way I got down. But I'm telling you the example because for me, it stayed with me so strong as an example, because the reaction of allowing the creation of meaning had such a strong result, made me collapse. As long as there was no meaning, everything was fine. So it's kind of at the moment of contact with the senses and the world, even before any tfisa, really, there wasn't anything there. So it kind of was on that place of contact before it builds in, before construction happened. And it was not an easy place to practice. And it reminds me of the Bahaya Sutta, of course, of the just seeing, just hearing, just knowing. And in a way, like in the Bahaya Sutta says, just seeing means you're not around. Where are you? You're in the seeing. There's just seeing happening. There's no. So in my case, the very strong sankara just wasn't there. So in a way, I wasn't there, or I was less there. But anyway, more to the point, more easy for us to practice is the next stage after that, which is the stage that we process the world. And we process the world through Vedana, or feeling life. Because the world is just the world. How we receive the world is according to our interests, according to what we want, according to what we're used to. That's how we receive the world. So this place of receiving the world and choosing and judging and deciding what goes in, what we know, what we want, what we don't want, that's the place where we really practice in terms of Dharma practice. It's the easiest place to practice. And it's practicing in two levels. One is the push and the pull. I like, I don't like. It's the beginning of all the construction after that. Craving, wanting, clinging, having, needing, and the me. My, what I want, what I like, what I don't like, who am I, etc. So it's the beginning point of all of that. And it's where it's the easiest place to practice, in a way, of all things. Because we can quite easily, it's strong, it's clear, quite easily see, oh, I like this, I don't like that. The heart is moving the mind, and we find ourselves choosing things, selecting things, wanting things, not wanting things, and there we can dissolve all of that stuff. And it's interesting, this process of selection, how we is actually very, very important. Because if we think at this moment, million impressions, roshamim, are coming into our eyes, ears, nose, mouth, skin, body, and mind. Millions, right now. We are only interested in 0.0001% mikola roshamim. That's all we are ready for. And like the story of the soup yesterday, that's all we're ready for. And from this 0.0001% of the roshamim, of the impressions that we're ready for, that we are choosing, we call that reality. It's so funny, we call that reality, because that's what we call, that is reality for us. So we look at that in the Dharma life. And one of the things that we do, for example, yesterday we were doing walking meditation. So, you see the way a very boring thing called touching the earth, we open it, we open it, we open it. It's allowing in impressions that don't have any special message to us, that we don't like specially, but it's allowing the world to be less formed, less me and what I need, and my world, and what I have, and what I don't have. And it's breaking the chain of samsara, of paticca samuppada, because we're simply allowing in more stuff without being controlling, being the sensor, being the filter, the masanin, according to our needs and likes and not likes. So our needs might be, I want to eat, and we're busy with that thought, then we don't know we're walking. But the antidote there, the practice, is to widen, the expand through mindfulness, expand the world that we live in. And then all kinds of awarenesses open up, such as touching the earth, breathing, feeling the, listening to the birds. The world gets much, much bigger, and we're already not constructing samsara for us. We're in a big world of impressions, and we just stream through that world We just kind of, you know, just float through that world of change, of anicca, changing, moving, impressions, passing, and of which we have in there liking, not liking. So it's very important to practice with Vedana, liking and disliking. And we practice by going out of the automat, by not responding. If, for example, there's a pain in the body, not responding straight away. And this is practice that you all know about. I won't go into it all again, but not responding in the usual way, in the usual habits, constructing habit. Being with the awareness of it, seeing how it changes and moves, being bigger than the sankhara of a painful back. Being bigger than the sankhara, watching it as it comes and it goes, not seeing it so relevant or interesting anymore, not the main thing in my life. Yes, then my back is hurting, but my hands are fine. Reframe it as experience, not as a problem. Reframe ourselves not as a victim or a sufferer, but as a consciousness that is receiving things as they come and go and change. So reframe the whole situation, that stops samsara, the chain, from keeping going. And it's easier than, or more or less, any other place. Things are no longer objects. The pain is not an object. Becomes an experience, becomes a relationship, becomes a dynamic, becomes something else. We can even see inside the pain, there's no longer pain. It's actually just sensation. It just can even be pleasant. Find, you know, pleasant sensations inside unpleasant sensations. It's a place that we can work. So anything that makes this whole field of human experience dynamic and free and less closed inside structure and belief and views and fixed identifications, anything is going to help us. The three characteristics, dukkha, anicca, anatta, all of them are the engines that drive our liberation. All of them creating a dynamic view, non-anatta, non-self, anicca, changeability, impermanence, dukkha, the pain of constructions. All of those insights again and again and again, as we sit, as we practice, as we're in the middle of life, we see, you know, at any moment the dynamic nature of things. We see the way we construct our world again and again, and we can shift it, we can liberate ourselves from it. The next steps after that, after Vedana, are clinging, craving, and building the self, becoming, and so on. They're actually the places where there's maximum pain. They're the stories that you told just now, that we heard. They're about clinging. They're about clinging to, there's this pattern in relationship. For example, the most difficult place of clinging is relationships, I think. Probably one, you know, maybe the most difficult in relationships with others close to us, is where the buttons are pressed. We can be, you know, Jack Cornfield's story of coming back after 10 years in the monastery, and he came back to his mother, and all the old buttons were still there. Or, you know, the relationship issues are really strong. That's where clinging, craving, etc., it becomes, attachment is really, really strong. And we find ourselves then maximum dukkha. But still, even there, even in the middle of the facing our mother and father with all the old stuff, the formations, the sankharas, the difficulties, even there is a dynamic. We can breathe and stop and see, yes, there's a lot of dukkha here. We can breathe and stop and see, oh, there's lots of construction going on. We can find little spaces where we are standing on our own ground. And we can ask some questions. Does it really exist, this pattern that keeps going around with my mother, father? Does it really exist? Who is doing it? Who is making this thing going on and on? Where is it deriving its power to keep going and going? What is clinging? Where is the clinging? Where is it the power that makes it keep going? We can ask these kind of questions. Who? What is it made of, this construction? It's an interesting question. What's it made of that makes me react? Here I am, big person. I've been gone to India for 10 years. Big person. And I go to my mother and it all collapsed down to... What's this collapse? What's it made of? What's it? How is it? How's it formed? What's it? What's this sankhara made of? Who am I in the middle of it? So even in the most difficult, apparently difficult places, there is room. We can find room for first of all dukkha, to notice it, and then slowly begin to deconstruct the constructions. Through wisdom, through taking spaces, through asking questions, through antidotes, love and compassion are the antidotes, changing the sankharas for more healthy ones. All the tools we can offer in life are all there. Mindfulness, any amount of mindfulness will help to dissolve the constructions, give space. And sometimes we find these constructions collapse. Just like house of cards, because they're house of cards, they're just not made of anything, so they actually collapse, they seem so strong, they actually can collapse into nothing. You look again at the eyes of, well, you know, your eyes of your person you're arguing with so intensely, and sometimes that other person too both of you can just laugh and say, yeah, we were caught. The collapse is right there, right in the middle of things. Things collapse with the eye, with a little bit of wisdom eye. I want to finish with a small story about my granddaughter Lisa. And she, the other day, just talking about these patterns, she's 4 years old. And she plays with her cousin Amitai, the son of my other daughter. And they enjoy to play together, but they can quite easily get into fights. And there was a fight, and she ran out, and she said, "Anachnu bariv." Okay, all right. "Ani yode," she said, "shehariv hazeh, to our house, the grandparents. I That's what she said. But Amitai, who choshev, shehariv ye lenetzach ad machar. But who yodeh, lo yodeh, שהריב עובר בחמש דקות. הריב בטח עובר בחמש דקות, אפילו אצלו הוא ישכח בחמש דקות, אבל הוא לא יודע את זה עכשיו. Fantastic. 4-year-old kid had that insight. I'm just giving you an example how the thing can collapse with a little bit of insight. You know, if we have this insight. 4-year-old kid. So with that...
They forget it when they get older.
Yeah. But we haven't forgotten it. We have to go back there. We don't forget it completely. What I'd like to do is just to take 2 minutes of silence, and then let's have some discussion about this. Let's just have some sharing, discussion, reactions, okay, about the talk. Let's just take 2 minutes just to settle down.